pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Tuesday morning. I always lose track of the dates of the week. Coming up here in just a moment, actually sitting in here with us for this first hour, maybe a little longer, former State Senator Tripp Pittman. We'll talk to him in just a second. For Breitbart News, my colleague there, Bradley Jay, that's in the 10 o'clock hour, and then in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll wrap it up with the Republican chairman of Alabama, or ALGOP chairman, John Wall. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. Always 251-343-0106 if you want to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is text me, and I will do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Joining us now, however, late addition to the guest roster, but always welcome on this program, our senior United States Senator Tommy Tuberville is with us. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Yep, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you. It's a beautiful day here in the swamp. We've got about 73 degrees. Sun's out. The cherry blossoms will be coming soon. So those of you thinking about coming end of this month, it should be blossoming out. What a beautiful sight when that happens, I'll tell you.
Well, been up there, done that many times. You just got to be careful not to trip over the tourist in all of the cherry blossoms. Well, how's it going up there? We'll kick it off here. We saw you on a Fox Business last night on Larry Kudlow's show. Kind of a lot of interesting stuff, at least pertaining to the Elon Musk Doge situation. But things seem to be kind of humming along, as maybe better than anticipated.
Well, unfortunately, he's more successful than anticipated. He's finding a lot of fraud and waste. That's what he's there for, Jeff. I visited with him a little bit before his interview, after mine, and of course they're after him. He, you know, X was hacked yesterday. They're attacking his car dealerships. His stock's gone down 40%, but he is more motivated now than ever. So thank God for President Trump and Elon Musk. We can't continue the route. You and I have talked about this. We're leaking oil bad. Our country is being defrauded and being stolen and all over the world. And this past administration just threw money out the door. I just met with the League of Municipalities from Alabama this morning. I guess 300 or 400. And, you know, normally, you know, we're able to give out grants, send back money that they've sent up here, taxpayers, to cities and counties with commissioners who were here last week. The problem is all that money's been stolen. And it's sad. You know, this is not a Democrat Republican thing. This is a criminal action that has happened from Washington, D.C. in the last years. And again, you know, American taxpayer, people in Alabama, we'd spend sent about $4.5 trillion up here. And last 4 years, we spent $7 trillion. And it's criminal what has happened. But I'm very much on President Trump's side with the tariffs. These tariffs, Jeff, are going to be hard on a lot of people. Everybody's going to suffer a little bit from it, but we got to do it, because at the end of the day, tariffs will bring in money. It will cause more manufacturing to come here. We'll have more money sent to Washington by people, more people working instead of taking an entitlement. And that's what's got to happen. And hopefully, as President Trump says, tariffs will eventually take over a lot of the federal tax money that's sent from every citizen across this country. So there's a double sword right here, and hopefully this all works. But it's our only opportunity. There's nothing else we can do other than catch the thieves up here, the politicians and the people that are stealing the money.
I mean, here's the weird thing, and it seems very convenient for the Republicans, but I watch what happened in that joint address last week, and I watch the Democrats, Trump's taking these 80-20 issues, claiming the 80% side, and Democrats seem just okay with taking the least popular side of these issues, and it just comes off as insane. And I kind of wonder, Coach, you know, you're sitting up there as a U.S. senator, that, I mean, they're kind of playing right into his hands almost. It doesn't, it just, I, you know, to me, it's irrational.
it is. It's disheartening too. Yeah, we need two partners. We need two parties here. We don't need just the Republican Party. We need a good Democrat Party. But the problem is they're disintegrating over there. They can't understand why they just got their tail handed to them in an election, November the 5th. They don't understand it. They don't understand that the American people want a free speech, a country that they can live in and have the opportunities that our forefathers had and gave us. So what is it about they don't understand? I don't know. They just love power. They love the opportunity of just giving our country away, turning us into socialism, globalist, open borders. And the American people said, no way. And so here we are. I'm thinking that surely they'll come to their senses. But not one of them over there has a clue about why they just got their tails handed to them. And they better wake up, smell the roses, or it's going to be Democrat Party versus the socialist left party.
One more question for you, Coach. Dealing the shutdown, you know, potential here with the Democrats, what does that look like going forward? I mean, you know, I know it's going to get through the House as CR, but we get to the Senate. Is it going to be politics as usual, or do you see some of your colleagues on the other side coming around?
I don't know what to expect, Jeff. You know, I would, you know, and I'm not for a continuing resolution. I'm going to vote for it simply for the fact that President Trump, there's nothing else we can do for him. We got to give him some time to breathe, a time for the next 6 months to be able to work his agenda, to put his game plan into effect. If we don't do a CR, then, and I know we're spending it the same amount that we spent for the last 4 years, but if we don't do that, the Democrats want to shut the country down. And I don't know why, because they'll pay the price for it. But at the end of the day, we're all working for the American people. And so I would hope that the House would pass the CR till September of next year. And it'll come to us. We have to get 60 votes. Now, we only got 53 Republicans. So what does that mean? We got to get right. Seven Democrats. And Rand Paul said he's not going to vote for it. So that means we got to get 8. So if that doesn't happen this weekend, the government will shut down. And again, it's not going to be because of Republicans. It's going to be because of Democrats. Now, here's the option. They want a, 20 or 30 day CR, but that doesn't do anything. Now, all that does is can down the road and doesn't give President Trump any breathing room. But again, Democrats could care less about the country. They care about them and their future.
Coach, sit in with me this morning. I have former state senator Trip Pittman. Senator, you had a question for Coach?
Well, first, Coach, it's a breath of fresh air to have you up in Washington, D.C. I appreciate your service and thanks for your common sense. I hope you stay there because the big things that happen in Washington, D.C., unfortunately. But I saw you on Kudlow last night, did a great job, and I really appreciate, as a former budget chairman, your understanding the one big, beautiful bill is the best way for y'all if you get the CR and can work on passing the budget, you know, what the House is trying to do, I think is the best way to get the tax cuts and the efficiencies in government that you need to do. If you start separating them, there's way too many games to be played. But I did appreciate very much that perspective that you have in that position.
Well, I appreciate it. And you're exactly right. You know, a lot of people up here want to do two bills. Senator, it's hard to do one bill. Almost impossible to get reconciliation with one bill. But we need to combine the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and we need to put the efficiency in. Let's don't forget about the number one thing right now is the border. They need money at the border. Tom Homan and Kristi Noem are just about out of money, and we've got to get them money down there where they can continue to block, you know, things at the border, build the wall, get the technology done, hire more people that are going to work, not just the southern border, but the northern border, and do that. So hopefully, you know, a lot of my Senate colleagues think they invented the Constitution up here, not just Democrat, also Republican. They think that they're always right. Sooner or later, they're going to start listening to the guys that's calling the plays, and then that's Donald Trump. But for some reason, again, a lot of them up here, you know, think that, you know, what they think is right. How about we think for the American people and give President Trump a chance to do what he thinks is right because he's the one that was elected by landslide. So thank you for your thoughts. And again, one bill, if we can get it done. If we can't get one done, we're not definitely not going to get two done.
Well, that's right. One or nothing's what I say. Go for it, right? And I think you got to push it as hard as you can, because that's the best chance to get the money for the border, to get the money that you need for to be able to offsets, to be able to keep the tax cuts, and then to get the efficiencies that DOGE and y'all are all working on to help better manage the hardworking taxpayers' money.
Yeah, well, it's a fight. I mean, I never dreamed that I would have to be up here, and we know what the new game plan is, because what they've been doing is not working. I mean, it's just god awful. And so we got a new sheriff in town. We got a new quarterback and DOGE and Elon Musk. Give them the ball, let them run with it, and let them create an economy here that can withstand anything. The three wars that are going on, everything that we need to protect our country with, put money back in the people's pocket, and cut taxes while we're doing it, get manufactured and move back. But people up here, I'm telling you again, Democrats and a lot of Republicans think they know better than anybody. But guess what? They're the ones that's been up here forever. And they're about to run this country slap into the ground. So we're fighting back hard. And so hopefully in the next month, we'll tell the tale a lot on what this country, what's the direction this country's going. And President Trump knows it.
Well, thank you. Glad you're there fighting the battle, Coach. Keep it up. Okay. God bless.
Thank you.
Coach,
thank you. God bless.
Coach, a couple more minutes here, and we'll let you get back to the business of the country. But, I mean, you got to talk about it. The rumor mill about running for governor here. What's your calculus? What are you looking at here? Can you tell us anything?
Yeah, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of time to even think about it, other than the fact that, you know, a lot of people are calling, you know, both ways. And here's what I tell people. Listen, when I want to do whatever's best for the people in our state. I'm not doing it for me or anything other than the fact of I want to give back. And I told you this is my service to the country. Whichever way it takes me, I'll work with my family. I'll work with people up here. I'll talk with the president. I'll talk with people back home, the leaders back home. I want to do what's best. I mean, I'm not the answer to everything, but, I am a fighter. And again, if my calling is to run for governor, I'll do that. If my calling is to stay here, I'll do that. But again, it's not me just making that decision. Other people will be on, involved in that. And, you know, hopefully that we make this right decision. But again, it's all has to do with how can I help the state of Alabama more. That is what this is all about. And one way or another, we'll make a decision here in the short future and get on with life.
Well, Coach, as one supporter and a humble citizen of the state, I hope you stay in Washington, D.C. You're doing a great job. You're a breath of fresh air, and you're articulating common sense and not afraid to express your opinion, which is a rare thing inside the Beltway. So I hope God leads you to keep doing the good job that you're doing in a very difficult situation in our nation's capital.
All right, guys. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Talk to you soon. God bless you. And hope we start getting some answers soon for this country, because right now we're in a state of turmoil up here. But that's what, I guess, politics is all about.
Coach, thanks for hopping on. And maybe next time we could talk a little Auburn basketball and lighten the mood here. But War Eagle, and yeah. Thanks for hopping on this morning.
All right, Jeff. God bless.
That was U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville there. I don't know the gubernatorial stuff. We could get into that in the next couple of segments with former State Senator Trip Pittman. But got to get a break in here right now. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Sat in search of one step and back of themselves and their slow moving dreams. You gave me nothing in return. You know it ain't so hard to say. Would you please just go away?
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, That's all you got to do is you got to text me real quick. We'll blow through these texts. Hey, I want to ask Coach why he would be against a Mobile company building the next Air Force One for the President of the United States. It seems like a really bad idea. He needs to come together and realize we have a lot of different investments in Mobile, Alabama, from a lot of different places. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of okay with Boeing building Air Force One, but we can have that discussion later. Bobby Issues, the question is, how long are those Americans living check to check with prices rising to make it? Why weren't you asking this question during the Biden years? And then finally, Michael writes, I agree, Coach has done a great job in Washington, but Alabama needs his leadership to break the cycle of weak pseudo-conservatism we've seen over the past several decades. So, Senator, you said like you're on the stay, Coach, stay bandwagon there with Tommy Tuberville.
Well, he's conservative. You know, he's a real person. He's not afraid to call balls and strikes. And having been a state senator for 11 years and term limiting myself out by choice, you understand the budgets and the interaction between the states and the federal government. And there's so many roadblocks between what you can do is at the state level. So at the federal level, you can actually change the policies. You can defund some of these policies. So you can make the difference in the big picture a lot more at the federal level because, you know, they're the dog and we're the tail. We depend on their deficit spending. So let him focus on the budget. Let him focus on being there because it's a great opportunity to be have a real conservative in the U.S. Senate. And then Alabama, you know, we could use two of them, right? We could use two of them, but you can't clone him.
Well, I'll say this, though. Now, look, he's got two good years with Trump and a Republican majority. 26 comes and goes. I don't know if the Republicans keep the majority. So, number one, he's in the minority, but a lot of his Republican colleagues don't like him because of those holds he had on those officers. He's kind of on an island by himself. I mean, a six-year commitment to do what? Fend off impeachment if the Democrats take the House for the next, you know, at least 2 years, and then who knows what you get in the White House after that. I can see where a four-year gubernatorial commitment is very appealing in that scenario.
Well, let's talk about governing first. There are always elections, and we always talk about, as I mentioned to you when we were off the air, right now we've got to get the budget passed. We've got to try to incorporate a lot of these DOGE findings in the actual legislation that passes. And we need to focus on governing. You know, we don't – 2 years, 4 years from now, we're going into a recession – and that some tough things are being done. Some I agree with, some I don't. But at the end of the day, we've got to govern for those people that are putting on their pants and their skirts and going to work every day and trying to make a living and raise their children. Because what happens to your, the coach running for office right now, we need him focusing on the job he got elected to do. And unfortunately, when you start to run for a statewide office or a federal office, it's all encompassing and takes all your time. And right now, we all need to focus on Donald Trump, his agenda, having majorities in both houses, which you said is probably fleeting, and get the work of the people done and pass one big budget that, extends the tax credits and also using sequestration to get 50% votes in the Senate to pass the budget, you know, with the tax cuts. Well, and the offsets on the spending side.
What do you think? I mean, because I think he's going to run for governor. I think this discussion's fine, but at the end of the day, he's going to run for governor. What do you think that looks like?
Well, I think when I encouraged him to stay, and his response was very terse compared to his denials.
Until his denials
on not running for governor, I told you the same thing. I think he's got he wants to do that, and I think that, you know, I've been in state politics. You've got the elected officials. You got the three houses. It's three-dimensional chess. You got all the wild cards. You've got the oligarchs. You have all of the lobbyists, all the advocates that are full of talent. And so I just think that, being governor can be a lot of fun, but coming home and trying to do some of what's happening in Washington is going to be real hard work. And he thinks it's tough in Washington, it can be just as tough in Montgomery.
That's true. Well, we got that discussion a little further later on in the hour. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with me, your show host. All you got to do is text. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 1065.
What you do with me when you don't believe a word I say.
watching TV with my best friend, laughing at the late night show. I don't know what's wrong with me, cause I know I need my rest. But if I don't stay up all night and sleep all day, I ain't at my best.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with me, your show host. All you got to do is text. It's that easy. Still with us here, sitting in at the Fairhope Bureau, former State Senator Trip Pittman. Well, we are in the throes of a legislative session, Senator, and I'm, you know, my new mission in life is just to call out Bobby Singleton every opportunity I get. I was hopeful with Garland Gudger being pro tem. You watch this stuff. I mean, does it just look like it's going to be business as usual to you up there?
Well, there's a way to try to go along and get along. But if you're going to try to be efficient with the time, which is limited to 30 session days, which isn't a bad idea on its own, but the game is about how to kill days and create crises so that the powers that be can get what they want and leave the people's business or other things on the sideline. The bill got out of committee. The bill got out of one house, just didn't have time to get it through. There'll be a crisis in the last day or few hours that's created by what's happening in the first quarter, right? First half. I call it Groundhog Day. You know, you watch Groundhog Day and it's, you know, Sonny and Cher coming on every morning, and it's the same song. The same song is the same dance, and this is the game that's played. And ultimately, I think that you know, that Singleton at the microphone just keeps somebody else from having to be at the microphone. I couldn't stay away. I think the philosophical arguments need to be, and you need to refute the claims he's making against the current elected people in Washington, and he needs to be challenged. But Bobby, he loves his role as he likes to stir the pot.
What do you think of the Senate rules? So, I mean, like, the House has cracked down on a lot of this. Now, look, if it were like a 50-50 Senate or something, you know, or 51-49, but it's Republican supermajority. It's just abuse of the rules by two members. At least 2 years ago, because we added it up, spoke more than all 33 other senators combined. That's just not what we voted for.
Correct, but you have cloture. We called it zapping. We zapped the Democrats, and you know, 40 times in 2000.
But they just won't.
They won't want to do it because there are methods and procedures at the Democratic side. But again,
when's the last time they did cloture in the state? I don't know
that they've done it.
They did a couple special sessions on the president's calls.
Right, but I don't think they've done
Beasley.
It.
Yeah.
It's not used, and there's certain cases where, you know, there's a lot of decisions that need to be made, certainly by the pro tem. He controls, he runs the whole body, but he also controls the baskets. And the baskets are where the bills go, and whether they're going to get to the floor or, you know, once they get through the committees or once they get transferred from the House, whether or not they're going to get on the floor. And then the rules chairman on where they stack the bills. But, you know,
the rules chairman is Jabba Wagner. God bless him. I know he's been in the legislature off and on since the 60s. But, like, he's putting these bills at the front of the calendar that have, like, two or three amendments, giving them an extra hour of time. I mean, this doesn't seem very strategic.
Didn't I just tell you it's the same thing? That's how you stack the bills to keep from getting to bills. You put poison pills on the front.
So you think he's entirely aware of this? Or
I think Jabbo, I love Jabbo, you know, and we served, and he's a great guy. He's a public servant. But he is sometimes bends to the will of others. And allows himself
so it's
to
just the same old same the play, old.
He,
right?
he follows the playbook. Okay, I mean, he follows the playbook.
It's just the same. That the long story short, nothing's changed under the new pro tem.
Groundhog Day.
Was there any reason to believe it's ever going to change, or with even with him, with Garland Gudger?
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, Garland. You know, obviously he had calls to run for. He lived through a terrible accident. I've been there before, and he's led to the serve. But he faces real challenges, and, you know, Greg Reed, a good friend and somebody I like a lot, he was, you know, again, they weren't in the minority like Dell was served, and like the Republicans were, and I was for 3 years. You know, you don't understand what it's like to be in the minority, and so then when you do have the opportunity, and you have the common enemy like AEA and the budget challenges we faced, we had to make some tough
decisions.
Well,
you were there. I mean, would would the Democrats in charge have put up with what is going on now at the shoe on the other foot?
Well, they would. No. It depends on the issue.
No, they wouldn't.
Well, the Democrats wouldn't put up. You said the Republicans. You said the Democrats wouldn't put up with it. The Republicans wouldn't put up with it just because. The
Republicans are putting up with it now.
Right, but they wouldn't. They didn't put up with it then. They on certain days, you know, you give them. Dell was definitely a facilitator.
Well, when the Democrats ran that town, they would not have let two Republicans run the show.
Well, they had their own problems. You know, we were only they didn't have a supermajority, and so or it was such a close vote. They had their own free wills, and you know, Phil Pools and Ted Little. They had people that would and Roger Bedford that would march their own drum, and so they had to work within their own caucus. They had people that would go to the microphone. That we don't.
They
have.
Had internal. Turmoil.
They had internal strife. Yeah. You know, you had a supermajority of Democrats when there were two or three Republicans in the Senate, and they divided in half and fought all the time. Which is what Montgomery wants. They want conflict. They want chaos because chaos kills time. And when you kill time, then you stop a lot of things you don't want, and you create a crisis so that you can get the things you want when the clock's running down.
Well, I don't know. I just part of the reason this goes on, Senator, is because no one really, to be honest, no one really cares, I think, out here in the public. But I think if you knew it was this is the weird situation and you vote for these people, if this were Washington, D.C., and you had a supermajority and you had two Republican supermajority, you had two Democrats controlling the U.S. Senate like the way the state Senate is, there'd be pitchforks and torches.
Well, that's a whole nother realm up there. I don't know that, there's a lot of philosophical divergence between people, even a lot greater than there is in Alabama,
well,
right?
Fair
where
enough.
People believe, you know, a lot of state U.S. senators. So I can't, again, it's a game, right? It's professional wrestling. It's not a game. It's serious as a heart attack. And, you know, Coach gets that. You know, he understands this, and he understands the unique. You know, it's better that Trump got elected this time because this time he has a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate. He's not dealing with all the judicial and the legal things that would be tied up with. He's not dealing with COVID. This is a unique moment in history. It's, you know, we'll survive. But right now, the biggest game in Washington's kick the can. That's the biggest game in Montgomery is kick the can. And right now, we have a chance with the majorities in the House and the Senate and the president to pass a budget, one big bill through reconciliation that will incorporate the cuts that DOGE is working on plus some others by defunding them through the legal process to get to extend the tax cuts, make them permanent, to fund the border and to get these things passed. And if they do it in one bill, they can get it done. If they try to divide the bills, you divide and conquer, it'll never all come together. So there's a unique moment in history. I'm glad that Senator Tuberville recognizes that. I think the House recognizes they're not going to fall for the Senate trying to divide and conquer.
Well, and Coach is keenly aware of this, apparently. They're probably going to get this done ultimately, though. Wouldn't you think just the momentum is – it looks to be no matter what now, the Democrats look lost. They don't have a message. They don't. The polling is not going their way like it did in 2017 at this stage of the Trump presidency.
Sometimes looking lost is a good strategy, but I assure you that they're trying to run out the clock, right? They're exactly. Playing the four corners, right?
Yeah.
And to say that you're going to do more in the fall, I mean, to me, the CR, let's pass the CR. I think right now you need to put the CR into the mix. You know, let's put the CR in the mix along with the budget, with the priorities of the president and the tax cuts, and let's don't kick one of the major pressure points that's coming up with the budget and extending it without getting what you want. You know, you got to get something in politics. There's critical times and moments. So I would not pass a long CR, but the president wants it, so the president's going to get it. I think the better strategy would be to have a short-term CR to get the extension of the tax credits, which Stephen Moore advocated. We should get the tax credits extended before we do the tariffs. Newspapers have advocated that because of the budget cuts and because of the recession that we are in, you just look at the inventories at the dealerships and the lawnmower places and all the tractor places, that if we deal with that, that will solve some of the trade issues. And it's going to take years for us to bring the manufacturing back into this country. So I think in the short term, they need to use the CR and the pressure on the budget situation to help get the budget passed, to get the tax cuts extended.
Joined by former State Senator Tripp Pittman here on the program for a few more segments. We got into it a little bit about this 26th cycle, and you obviously wanted Tuberville to stay up there, remain senator, but did Zanes work capable at the gubernatorial level in your view?
I think that Wills can certainly do. I think he's capable from a electoral standpoint, right? You got to get elected. Right? And the secondly, I think, from a standpoint of being a businessman, strong values, that he would could do a good job in Washington. But again, the same commitment you're talking about. I mean, the challenge is that once you get to a legislative body, I term myself out because I believe in term limits. And I think that it would be a good thing to have at three or four terms in the state and the Congress. But as long as you don't have it, then seniority is the tiebreaker for the committee chairmanships. And you really kind of have a commitment until there are term limits when you get in that position to stay there and occupy that space, because Washington's Congress is run in both houses by very few people, the ones that control the money, the ones that control who are the committee chairman. It's the same thing in Montgomery. There's a handful of people that the money flows through, and just like you've pointed out with the Roland Reserve, how it's kind of some ways eliminated proration that forced people to make tough decisions and cuts, the campaign finance has really more than ever tied the different people running for office to certain political entities that give large sums of money to get these people elected. So can he do anything? I think that Will could definitely be a formidable candidate. I think he could be a good U.S. senator if that's something he wanted to do. But just like learning, understanding the playing field, understanding the rules and the process, because there's a process in politics just like there's a process in any sport or football. What Coach Senator Tuberville's learning in Washington would have to be some degree relearned in Montgomery, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of people trying to help him out on how things need to be done.
Tell me something now. You kind of raised a point about the Rolling Reserve, and the appetite in the state is largely a reflection of what's going on in Washington, D.C. with Doge, I think, and Elon Musk, and people are kind of getting excited about cutting government. I mean, who would have thought? And in this state, whenever I have these discussions, Chairman Garrett in the House or Senator Orr in the Senate, well, they'll point to this ACES thing. I don't think that quite checks the box. But is there places in state government where you have, like, the significant waste, fraud, and abuse in Montgomery like you have in Washington? Because it seems like it's pretty lean in Montgomery compared to D.C., right? I mean, so it makes it harder to achieve, like, a Doge strategy at the state level.
There's always waste, and you can reprioritize. But for every level of funding in both areas, the federal and the state, they're advocates. They're people that are pushing for that money. People love to spend other people's money. If they don't have enough, they get to borrow it, and that's the difference in Washington, is that you don't have to pay for the cost of your government directly. Of course, inflation and other consequences are rearing their head because of that. But, yeah, we've had Republican rule in Alabama since 2011 for the first time in 135 years, and there was a lot of managing that went on, not the least of which was caused by us having to actually cut the budgets. But as time has gone on, there are programs that we've funded that, I'm going to make some people mad, but this running this, these cables all over the broadband cables all over this state. I mean, they ran one in front of my hunting club. Like, I need it in front of my hunting club. How do I tie into it, right? I got my front yard, but, you've got the Starlink. You've got other ways. I think Sometimes we fund old technology. Arthur Orr, he's sitting here worried about now people double dipping with some of the special money that's supposed to help people. Dual enrollment, you've talked about it. Well, dual enrollment means that the high school gets the money for the student and the junior college gets the money for the same student. Now, most people don't know that. So right. dual enrollment means dual money going out for the people. So, yes, there's plenty of ways to look at the efficiency, the way taxes are collected, the way that certain incentive programs are given to, you know, babies need to be weaned.
But is the tie for an Arthur Orr type who's like, he is just like a way I tell him and Auburn, they function more like goalkeepers. Like they're always knocking stuff down, saying, telling people no, which is fine. But like, instead of like making the priority just protecting your budget, looking for ways to cut the budget, because the budget's, since Kay Ivey's been governor now, it's not quite doubled, but it's getting real close. And I know some of that's inflation, but the budgets are out of control right now. I mean, by most standards.
Well, having, you know, knowing Arthur Orr and served with him and knowing Greg Allbritton, you may see the goaltending that's happening in the public. There's a lot of goaltending going on within the body, too, and within those caucuses, right? There's a lot of people that have a lot of ideas for spending money, and we're still putting a lot of money, you know, into reserves. And Bill Poole, who I served with when he was the House Ways and Means Chairman, that's now the Finance Director, they have fought off recurring revenue commitments, pay raises, fighting off COLAs, which is, you know, you make deals with retirees. And, of course, inflation that we talked about earlier is eroding the value of the dollar. But the idea that you can give more spending, because we're going to go through the economic cycle, and that's already happening now.
Well, let's get a break in here. We got former State Senator Trip Pittman in for a couple more segments. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Look away, Dixieland. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. Bradley J coming up in about 35 minutes or so. And in the 11 o'clock hour, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall, still with us for the next couple of segments, former State Senator Trip Pittman sitting in here. We're kind of talking about, I don't know, you talk about Coach being governor. You obviously are not in that camp. I don't know what he's for, what he's against. He's a wild card, right? I mean, like, we got to be careful with this. Now, look, he's done a good job in Washington, but as a senator versus, like, the chief executive of the state, he needs a little vetting, I would think.
Well, he has, positions. I mean, I think he'd have, you know, good philosophically. He's conservative. I think he'll have the right positions. I'm not opposed to Coach being governor. What I'm saying, having been at the state level and been a budget chair and seen the interaction between the state and the federal government, that what you can do in Washington, especially now in this window of time with a majority in the House and the Senate and with President Trump, deserves all of his focus. And when you need to occupy the space, and when you vacate that space, you know, who's going to replace you? And then, you know, who's going to get that experience that you have? I think that his moment in time, that he can make a bigger difference for the state of Alabama and for our country in Washington than he can Montgomery. Now, but, you know, he can come to Montgomery later. I mean, he's probably got a long, you know, long life ahead of him. I hope so. But
well, he's in his 70s now. If he takes office when he, you know, 78 years old, if he sticks around for another term in the U.S. Senate, you know, I don't know he'd have a gubernatorial run in him at that point, but I looking at it now, I mean, we're in agreement here. It sounded like from that interview we did that he is running for governor, and I'm like, my mind is in this place. Like, well, we need to think about what that would look like for the next year and a half and talk about that. And I don't know. I mean,
well, to that direct question, I'm gonna say no comment, because I hope at this point he focuses on this next, you know, 30, 60, 90 days on what we've got going on in Washington, D.C., because time goes by very fast. A year is not a very long period of time. I spent 11 years in Montgomery. It seemed a lot longer. But right now is a unique moment in history to try to do the things that we need to do to get our country on better fiscal, you know, better fiscal shape, to deal with a lot of the challenges around the world, a lot of the craziness that's going on, you know, with wokeness and the sexuality and just all of these crazy things, and we need to retrench. And well, so that's where the focus needs to be now, and not on the next election. We need to govern right now.
As long as that's out there, Democrats, that's all they got, right? They got these 20, they're taking the 20 on the 80-20 issues, and they're in trouble. The Democratic Party doesn't really have – it's going to be McGovern all over again if you leave it up to the base. Anyway, we're going to get a break in here. We'll pick it up on the other side. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. And the Wichita lineman is still on the
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Hour number two begins right now. We're extending his time since Coach cut into the very top of the show, but former State Senator Tripp Pittman, hopefully State Senator Tripp Pittman again someday, but you didn't hear that here, is sitting in with us this morning. Senator, something we talked about in the past, we didn't spend time on it this morning, but this push for Medicaid expansion, and kind of interesting thing you said. 56% labor participation rate is terrible in Alabama. And maybe it's 57 and they do a victory lap, but that's still pretty abysmal. You expand Medicaid, that thing's going up, right?
Well, that's the reality, is that we have people that are, you know, getting $40,000-$50,000 a year. If you know how to play the system, you don't have to have a job. You know, you can game the system. And, you know, I got people that work for me that bust their ass, work on their cars on the weekend if they can without all this new technology and the right to repair. But, Medicaid expansion, which is Obamacare expansion, is definitely going to be under, you know, the House resolution that was passed. The money's is in health care. You know, I sent you something the other day. I mean, number one's Medicare. Number two's other, which is Medicaid. Number three is interest on the national debt, and number four is defense. I mean, we spend over 25% of our GDP on health care, and so that has to be looked at. And the insidious part of Medicaid expansion, which is they pay a higher reimbursement rate. Instead of about two-thirds, they pay 90-95%. And then most of the people that take advantage of it are able-bodied adults. Even Paul Hubbard, the former leader of AEA and a Democrat, said that able-bodied people ought to have to work to eat. And I think that's a really good motivator. And so this idea that we're going to increase workforce participation with Medicaid expansion. North Carolina expanded Medicaid. They had 2 million people, a little under 2 million people on the Medicaid rolls a year ago. They anticipated that over several years, they would add 600,000 people to the Medicaid rolls. In less than a year, they've added 600,000 people to Medicaid. And so now when they start looking at making some cuts, there's, you know, the House resolution has about $800 billion in cuts that they're supposed to come up with. And a lot of that can be garnered from the Medicaid expansion, which basically says able-bodied adults. As you said earlier, David Sessions said, people can find a job.
Yeah,
they can find a job. They can find health care. But health care isn't a right. I'm still old school, all right?
This is David Sessions. If this is something you covet more than anything else, more than your paycheck, more than whatever, that health care coverage is very important to you. And, you know, there's some people out there that feel this way. You could get a job that has that health insurance plan in the state if you really, really, really want it. We don't necessarily need that right now.
No, it's not sustainable, especially what's happening in Washington. But yet, you know, again, there are ways. There is health care. There's public health. There is Medicaid that's there for pregnant women and for children.
Right.
There is the CHIP.
It's a social safety
there's
net.
There's CHIP, the children's health insurance. There is a safety net. And the reality is that, of course, the people that take advantage of it are the people that are sick and are less healthy, and then that drives up all of our insurance rates. So there's always cause and effect and unintended consequences with anything you do. But I'm adamantly opposed. I fought it when I was in office. It's chilled in Montgomery now simply because the cuts that are going to have to be made in this budget in order to offset extending the tax credits, some of that's going to have to come out of, I think, dealing with Obamacare and the higher reimbursement rates for mostly able-bodied adults.
Well, like, who in the state, this is, because I think I know, but, like, there are real, like, special interest in this state to benefit from Medicaid expansion, right? Like, you do this and you put this government money, be it through the federal government and the states matching, like, the health insurance industrial complex stands to gain from it, right?
Well, you can tell who gains from it because you have, instead of just the federal share and the state share, which is the way it was set up, you have now the provider taxes that are legal, but, you know, there's a big lapse in the auditing of that, and that there's reports on that right now. And what happens is you see who the hospitals pay hundreds of millions of dollars in voluntary tax. The physicians pay a voluntary tax. The pharmacists pay a voluntary tax. The nursing homes pay a voluntary tax. And then that money goes into the pool that they're able to match with Alabama dollars to draw down more federal dollars. And so those are the people that are supporting Medicaid. And I've had some arguments that Medicaid doesn't reimburse enough. But I also found out reading these reports yesterday is that there's also funds that go directly to some of these hospitals based on disproportionate share and other things. So, yeah, it's about trying to, I mean, some people have legitimate, let's cover more people. But the reality is that we have got to come to grips with the, with healthcare and the cost of healthcare in this country. And we can't afford the healthcare we have now, much less to be adding to and expanding it.
Well, I think because when you enter that government component into the healthcare quote unquote economy, it just causes healthcare inflation. It just causes the prices to go up even more. And I think that's a big part of the cost increase. But like you said, the people in the state who are going to get, because this is always the tale to me, who's out there talking about Medicaid expansion, and it tends to be sort of the mouthpieces of the big mules or wherever, the BCA. Yeah,
and
right.
They're involved in BCA. I mean, all the different providers, right, and these different entities are involved in BCA, and so there's some new organizations.
Like this is pro-business. It's kind of icky, right? Like we're going to expand Medicaid because that's pro-business, and that's the danger because that's their calling card, and that's the license to do whatever they want to in Montgomery.
And their arguments are all about more and more federal money and how do we draw it down. But there's not going to be the federal money. They're going to have to cut. The deficits, the inflation is there. We're in stagflation now, by the way, which is kind of like treading water. And, you know, Mark Spitz and even the greatest swimmers would drown if they have to tread water long enough. And so we've got to cut the deficits. We've got to build confidence and reward those people that are out there by extending the tax credits for businesses that are out there taking the risk. But no, the healthcare costs, there are ways out there for people to get it. But for us to expand Medicaid in Alabama now, because now the uncertainty of the federal funding, but it was a bad plan. Like I said, North Carolina, the number of people that get on the rolls, it's totally unsustainable. And it's Obamacare, right? It passed by one vote.
Trip Pittman's still with us here in the Fairhope Bureau. So we're kind of winding down on this, and thanks for coming by this morning. But the legislature, so there's this overtime tax exemption. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Anthony Daniels, of all people, led the way. And they're not wanting, you kind of sense it, they don't want to keep doing that where you don't pay income tax on overtime. But in lieu of that, they have a package of tax cuts, and I'm a little irritated with this. A couple of them are real tax cuts, like on retirement earnings or contributions or whatever. But what they want to do, which is already in statute, is go ahead and give the penny off the grocery tax to the state, gift it to us in exchange for going the overtime tax. I mean, well, what's the best tax policy? Is continuing this overtime tax exemption the way to go? Because I think that is a incentive to get people to go to work, whereas the others, maybe not so much.
Well, it definitely rewards people that are working, right? And it rewards people that are working at least 40 hours. And to make a living, you have to work more than 40 hours, right, to get to that time and a half. I had some questions as a business people. Well, do people, get to the overtime so they can make what they're worth? But again, I'm for tax policy that returns taxes to the people. I raised some taxes when I was in the and the budget chairman, because I believe the worst thing is not to pay for your government. If people had to pay for the government that we're getting out of Washington, they probably wouldn't want so much government. But I'm glad that, you know, Danny Garrett and they're working toward a package. I think a grocery tax is something that affects everybody, and it'll be good to go ahead and cut it. Even
but
though
that
the
overtime tax, if they let that expire,
well, I think they ought to extend it too. Okay,
but how can you do? They can't do both.
Well,
we got to pick one.
Okay, if you have to pick one, then I would say that it's probably they go ahead and they'd extend the overtime tax. Yeah. Is what I think would be the better thing, because these are people that are working, right, busting their ass, getting up and working 40 hours a week. You know, and they're trying to take care of themselves and their families. And, you know, they didn't realize how many people were having to get out there and work more than one job. You know, one job. We're talking 40 hours on one job, not even mentioning the people that work two or three 20-hour jobs or a 30-hour week job. And that doesn't count them.
They were overemployed. Yeah. But to me, if they let this thing expire, they have to own it. It's a tax increase, right?
I agree with you. If you take away a deduction, it's a statute. You know, they did put a sunset on it, so that's the fallback position, is to say. But you know, if they are going to sunset it, I'm certainly applaud them for coming back and realizing, from listening to you and others around the state that are advocating for fiscal conservancy and letting people keep their money, that they need to do something to try to.
They're trying to, but I don't know. I just like I said, the grocery tax should already be in the works. Okay. That's a cop out,
and it is going to be in the works if the growth comes back, will.
But
they're just giving you something that you've already got.
So it's the politics of it, but they're going to have to own this. They may not like it, but it may be, as Chairman Garrett told me, it's a cheap soundbite, but you're increasing taxes, okay? Anthony Daniels was really smart 2 years ago to do this, back them in the corner on their own issue. And this never, because this is the senator, if we had a real conservative legislature, you would never have the Democrat leader back the Republican caucus in a corner and force them down the road on this overtime tax, because they would have thought of their own tax, you know, relief on their own. And it was kind of smart, because now here we are 2 years later. Hey, is this what you voted for, Alabama? Did you vote for these guys to increase your payroll taxes?
Well, the money that, you know, politics is a process of dividing other people's money up. And
right.
So the more money they keep in Montgomery, the more money they can, can spread around. And some of it's needed. There are programs. There are things that money needs to be spent on, but there's also programs where money needs to be taken away from. But the only way to limit government is to limit the amount of money they have.
We keep adding stuff, especially the ETF. Like, they're building a health sciences school, Demopolis. Like, we've gotten to a place in Alabama where government is like a jobs program. There's a secondary benefit for all this new government, but you got to keep in mind, like, government's supposed to perform these essential services and duties, and that gets lost, especially with this governor, I think, who'll be gone soon.
Well, it's jobs. It's creating jobs, and these people get benefits, retirement,
right,
health care. I think that's why DOGE is so critical. Hopefully they can incorporate this in statute of the budgets to try to wean through
David Bronner cheering it on, because it increases his political clout.
Well,
right?
Also, he needs more worker bees to help fund the, you know, there are more people on retirement right now in terms of actual numbers receiving than there are actual people working.
Yeah, the David Bronner phenomenon, like, he does all these good things around the state to build his own political capital up. It makes it harder for the legislature to push back on some of his nonsense.
But he's such a sweet guy. Everybody loves him.
Oh, he's such a terrible human being.
Regardless, there are some inefficiencies. The taxpayers put about $1 billion a year backing up the teachers and the public employees' pension programs. People don't realize that. It's all budget. So just living up to the commitments we've already made, which is another reason not to expand Medicaid, is that we're going to have a hard time fiscally over time with the aging population of just living up to the promises we've already made, which is a reason why you can't give COLAs. Because we're going to have to focus on living up to the promises of giving the people the money that they were told they're going to get, even though it's not the real dollars they thought they were going to get. We can't promise them to get more dollars because we're not going to have the money to do it.
It's like a Ponzi scheme, right? Like, sort of, you know, then we'll figure it out later on down the line.
what I say, kick the can, right?
Yeah,
kick the can. As long as you have growth, as long as you have, you know, when people tell me they have three or four children, I said, hey, you're responsible.
The next governor is going
to. You got to have one more, Jeff, because if you have responsible citizens, you have this Ponzi scheme because you have to have more children. You have to have more. Hey, great to be with you today. I got to go back to work. Great studio. Great event. Great being on the show with you. The best to all the citizens and listeners around this great state. Take care.
State Senator Tripp Pittman there. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Tuesday morning. Coming up in the next segment, my colleague at Breitbart News, Bradley J. And then coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. So anyway, we will get to those in short order. We'll roll through some text here. Dirt Digger. Right. So Tuberville's doing a great job. So Tripp Pittman did a good job when he was in office! Gene, high tax rate under Eisenhower's 90%. America was booming and infrastructure was top priority. Now we are talking about lowering taxes even more. And we are trillions if we are in debt. Why are we raising? Why aren't we raising taxes? It's because conservatives adhere to the supply side philosophy. You got to, the tax cuts generate economic growth. They stimulate economic growth. And that way, when you cut the taxes, tax revenues can, they can go up. They have to be the right tax cuts. And, you know, I don't know, the government just doling out money through economic stimulus, but you got to have some kind of fiscal responsibility within government for that to be an effective strategy. I agree. Just cutting taxes and then spending is not, you know, that's bad for the economy. Obviously, he is in denial, your guest. About what? They're unnamed texter. Just listening to the news while you're on break. They're closing the beach underneath Alabama Point because of spring break. Is that the same as closing things for COVID? Or are they closing it because it's just so far off the beaten path that you can't really police it? I don't know. Like, what's going on there? Everybody's afraid of having, like, a... All these beach towns are afraid of Panama City Beach and the riffraff coming in. You know, when I was a kid, we'd go down to high school and college, and you'd be in your pickup truck, and you'd go up and down the strip, and you just kind of did the redneck spring break thing. And then, the culture changed. Like, you want a good, like, textbook example of, like, a cultural shift? That's it right there. And how spring break has changed over the years. It used to be kind of a MTV thing. Let's see. On the morning show, Hillary had all the shoulds and should nots concerning Ukraine. If he is so damn smart, why is he not in office? Not sure what that's about. Bob in Satsuma, how about we make no tax on hours worked over 40 hours? Some jobs do not get overtime, but get paid out comp time. Well, no, salary employees. It just make you a salary employee, and they don't have to pay you overtime. They text her, hey, Jeff, I live in House District 11, and I want to thank 1819 for running a piece on the League of Super Evil endorsing Albright in the special election even before qualifying closes. And in the day-to-day, that should make it completely obvious what the race is about and who the right candidate is. It's an interesting thing, that race up there. And I think you're going to see a real power. I mean, this is potentially a battleground race. The current leadership in the Alabama House of Representatives has picked their guy. Nathaniel Ledbetter, the speaker, friend of this program, is falling behind This is Heath Albright. I don't know anything about these candidates, but kind of watching it. And what's curious to me, and maybe we could talk about it with the speaker or some of his allies, is, man, you are really backing it up here, but getting behind this guy at this moment in time. Now, Randall Shedd, who was in that seat, is going to go work for Garland Gudger, or has gone to work for Garland Gudger in the Alabama State Senate. But, like, you see the powers of the state rallying around Heath Albright, and like, is who knows if another candidate comes along or somebody else comes along, you know, are you going to evaluate all the candidates? But why are they calling in all these favors, holding these fundraisers, and putting on the full court press for this candidate in this special election? It's just, what's going on there? Why all this attention? Let's get a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. To be a man. There's someone for everyone.
Spend my dollar parking a holler neath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight. Make a little loving. A little turn of loving on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Still to come on the program, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall, so stay tuned for that. But joining us now, my colleague at Breitbart News, one of my other jobs, always a pleasure, from Alabama, from Monroe County, our very own Bradley J joins us on the line. Bradley, good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Great to be with you, Jeff. It's an exciting day here in the Capitol, that's for sure.
Well, CR, it's all continuing resolution. Where are we?
It's going to be tight. But of course, if Republicans want to do anything this year, it's going to be tight. The margins, what they are, with 218 Republicans and 214 Democrats. I mean, if Republicans want to do anything, they can only lose one vote. But they already almost always will have that one vote with Thomas Massie opposing almost anything that goes on. Massey's come out and said that he will once again oppose this CR. So what are Republicans going to do? It's there's a lot of moving around. You have folks telling me that despite what some members are saying publicly, that they are undecided, not sure where they are, that they've already privately committed that they'll vote for it. But the margins are tight, so we'll see what happens this afternoon when the vote's called.
We can't be that far away from some of these. Because Trump kind of raided the pantry, though, with appointing these members of Congress to his cabinet, Michael Waltz, and obviously Gates didn't pan out, but Petronas was likely to win that seat. But the reinforcements got to be getting close to getting into town, right?
I believe that April 1st is when they'll arrive. I believe that that March 30th is that Florida special general election. And I can promise you that Mike Johnson will be anxious to get those two new members into town as fast as a jet can get them here. You also have, remember, Elise Stefanik, who's just kind of hanging out in the House right now. She hadn't been called up to be the ambassador to the UN yet because those margins are so tight. I'm sure she's anxious to begin that next chapter. In truth, I feel like President Trump, I mean, he's kind of his own ambassador to the UN. So it's not necessary that they ship her up the Turtle Bay yet. But that's just another indication of how difficult it is for Republicans to do anything in the House right now. It's just so difficult. On top of Mike Johnson perhaps not being the most forceful, powerful speaker, he's got to deal with those margins. So,
I mean,
I wouldn't want to be him right now.
I know. And Bradley, this is always a discussion, and you know, this is a highly speculative question, but like, if not Mike Johnson, then who else? I mean, Tom Emmert, I don't think could get elected speaker. This is the hand we're dealt as Republicans, and we're just going to have to play it, right?
Unquestionably for now. I do think if it came to a vote again in front of the Republican conference, that Tom Emmert would have a good shot. Remember what happened in October of 2023. What killed Emmert's candidacy for speaker was Trump publicly on Truth Social came out against him. That buried his chances. He had no shot after that. He's worked very hard to repair his relationship with not just Trump world, but with President Trump himself. They have a very good relationship now. He's very talented, very capable. And look, that's being speaker is not so much about what your necessarily what your political convictions are. I mean, Johnson had impeccable conservative credentials before he was elected speaker, and I don't need to run down the list of everything that he's done, from spending to Ukraine to warrantless surveillance since he became speaker. It's more about your personality, your political skills, and how you're going to move the agenda, especially with Trump in the White House. I mean, Trump's the one who's going to be calling the shots on policies. But that said, it's Mike Johnson for now. Trump seemed to have wavered a little bit in December, especially after Trump or Johnson overpromised on what he could do in moving the CR then. Trump stuck by him, knowing that he was going to have to carry the rucksack in moving a lot of these House Republicans along on much of his agenda. But that's where we are. It's where we look to remain for the time being. So Johnson's the guy.
Well, now we're pretty sure this eventually makes its way through, right? What does the Senate look like, you think?
So the Senate margins are tight, but they're better than they are. On its face, they're better than they are in the House. 53 Republicans, 47 Democrats. But remember, they've got to get 60 votes over there. You already have Senator Paul, who has come out in opposition to the CR. So it looks like if it does pass the House, and that's not a certainty, you will need 8 Democrat senators to come out in favor of advancing the CR and sending it to Trump's desk. I think if it does pass the House, that will happen. Just the momentum of this getting through one Republican body, the political momentum that gives it. Look, these Democrats would be voting to shut down the government. If you look at a lot of these, I don't want to call them moderate Democrats because there really aren't any left in the Senate after last year. But they don't want to be the ones who go to their all these federal employees and say, yeah, sorry, you're going to have to take a pass on getting a paycheck this week. They're already getting hammered for that. It's politically untenable for them to attack DOGE and Elon Musk in firing all these bureaucrats and then vote to furlough many, many more. I think that the CR would be in good shape if it gets through the House. But again, that's not a certainty. And we could get into the weeds with what might actually happen in the House. First, there's going to be a rule vote this afternoon around 12:30 our time, Alabama time. That's very unlikely to receive any Democrat votes. It's possible that a handful of Republicans who will ultimately vote against the CR would vote for the rule itself to move the CR to the floor. And then if that happens, you could have some Democrats who oppose the rule vote actually vote for the underlying CR. This isn't the way that Mike Johnson would draw it up. but it's the reality that he has to deal with right now. He'll take any kind of a win that he can get, and understandably, rightfully so. But it's up in the air right now. Just left the Capitol, and J.D. Vance personally appeared this morning in the House Republican Conference meeting to personally make that last-minute pitch. It wasn't so much on substance, but just sending a strong message. Look, President Trump is serious about moving the CR. To have a vice president come to the House side of the Capitol, that sends a very powerful message. I would not want to be a House Republican on the wrong side of Trump on this, because Trump has made very clear that the first step in moving his policy agenda is to pass this CR.
Yeah, it doesn't look like, you know, especially Vance up there on Capitol Hill, Trump's starting to tighten the screws a little bit. Like, look, this is a once in a lifetime, or you know the window here is not wide open. You got to act, and you know getting something is better than, you know, in the future potentially getting nothing.
The fact that you have so many Freedom Caucus folks coming out adamantly in support of this CR tells you how much political goodwill that Trump has earned, and how serious the Republicans take him when he says that he wants to cut spending. So much of that is due to Doge and what Elon Musk is doing. The Trump plan is fairly straightforward. Let's pass a CR for 6 months or so to keep the government open. Let Elon Musk continue to do his work uncovering all this waste, fraud, and abuse. He'll take those findings to Russ Boat at OMB, who will package that into a proposal for President Trump, and then President Trump will use that constitutional empowerment authority to spend underneath the caps, underneath that appropriation ceiling that Congress passes through the CR. Now, that itself is going to lead almost assuredly to a big legal battle that would probably end up in the Supreme Court, but it's a at that point, it's an Andrew Jackson situation, you know? All right, court, you've made your decision. Now come enforce it. The Democrats will, they'll raise holy hell at that. But you know what? Elections have consequences, and Democrats have the White House. They have the House. They have the Senate. And at least in the Supreme Court, a majority who have been appointed by Republicans. Who knows what might happen if that does make its way to the Supreme Court. But Trump is riding high right now. He's made very clear that this is his plan. This is how he wants to move forward. And, I mean, you've got so many Freedom Caucus and these conservatives who have sworn never to back a CR, and now they're getting behind it. That's due to Trump's unprecedented commitment to cut spending. And he says that this CR would freeze and then reduce spending. And, look, there, in years past, that wouldn't fly with a lot of these conservatives, but they're behind him right now, and that is just unprecedented.
Joined by Bradley Jay of Breitbart News here on the program. Bradley, I tell you what, though, and this is way, way off, but the polling here, I keep anticipating like it just to kind of fall off a cliff, that the the popularity of Trump will wane, and it's sustaining itself. Now, I mean, will it sustain itself to the midterms or not? I don't know. But if Republicans can be shown that they can do these things without taking too big of a hit, I mean, that's what they got to do. They got to show these members that you're not walking the plank here for the sake of whatever. For the sake of this president, that you know, these tend to be popular moves.
That's the challenge. We don't have to. I don't have to remind you about what generally happens in midterms with the president's party losing seats. But I don't think that's a certainty. So much of the traditional playbook is out of the window right now. And also, as we have discussed over and over again, who is the Democrat leader in pushing back on this? Is it Gavin Newsom? I mean, he's reaching out to conservatives right now, having Charlie Kirk on his podcast, trying to move back to the middle and show that he can take on conservatives. But he, there's no one in Congress. Hakeem Jeffries is struggling right now. A lot of his own members are growing restless at his inability to push back on a lot of this. You've got folks like David Axelrod and other Rahm Emanuel, other senior Democrats who have warned Democrats against choosing this moment to push back too much on a lot of what Doge is doing, a lot of these cuts to foreign aid, because it is popular throughout America. So who is going to emerge as the voice of Democrats? Tim Walz, give me a break.
Yeah,
but that's what it's going to take. That's what it's going to take to push back on this. And with a big, and it's just difficult to see the party coalescing around anyone who can do that.
I don't see the base going along with a more moderate candidate. Look, you want to win a general election in this country, the Democratic Party is going to have to moderate, but it's the inmates running the asylum, and they're going to have a civil war, or they're going to be stuck with like a George McGovern, Walter Mondale type of candidate in the future. Those are the kind of candidates they're going to put up, and those are not electable right now.
You're right. But who does it take to actually run a campaign on the presidential level as a Democrat? It's the radicals. These are the people who are politically involved. These are the people who are working on these campaigns. So they're really any Democrat presidential candidate is in so many ways is a hostage to those radical elements. It is a difficult place to be.
If they had their way, Bernie Sanders would have been their nominee in 2020. And in 2024, if you just left it open for a vote, they wouldn't have gone with Kamala Harris. I don't think so. She's just not a good campaigner. She couldn't have gone the run the gambit and won that nomination. She just doesn't do that. That's not her thing. And that's the problem. They had to kind of short circuit the system to get a candidate that they thought was electable. But now, I think going forward, they can't do that anymore.
Well, many Democrats were saying privately at the time of the Kamala coup that they don't even think that she can win. They just want to minimize their losses down ballot. I don't think that every Democrat believed that, but many did. Let's remember that there's a reason why in 2020 she didn't even make it to Iowa. I think that she had to leave the race before it even got into 2020. Right. I think she left in December. There's no way that Kamala could ever win a primary outright.
She's a bad candidate. Yeah.
She's a bad candidate. She doesn't have a base other than with donors, with big money donors, because she is just an absolutely empty vessel.
Yeah. Bradley, we're out of time here. Thanks for hopping on. Folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
On Twitter, Bradley AJ. We'll be keeping everyone up to date on what's going on with the CR battle this week. And, of course, on Breitbart.com. We're always putting out good content there. So please check us out there.
Bradley J., ladies and gentlemen. Bradley, thanks for hopping on. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
More than I could chew.
Thanks for hanging out with us on this Tuesday morning. So to come, John Wall, chairman of the Republican Party, they got their winter dinner guest lined up, Donald Trump Jr. coming to the Birmingham Jefferson County Civic Center, I believe next month, early next month. So we'll talk about that. Yeah, I was listening to that last segment about tariffs, and we're in this world. Well, here's the thing you need to know. Number one, the tariffs that Trump did in his first term, some of them didn't get rolled back by the Biden administration. It's kind of like taxes. In a way, they, you know, government becomes dependent on that revenue. And it's a danger, right? You start increasing tariffs, and then, as with everything in government, it's hard to get. It's like, watch these taxes in Montgomery. It seems like a real headache trying to talk the Republican supermajority down from the ledge here on, you know, dying on this hill for keeping some of these taxes in place. But I wonder that. I mean, do we run that risk? Do we run the risk of creating a permanent tariff situation or a very hard to lower tariff if we do that? Now, look, there are people in this sort of conservative space who have never met a tariff that's not necessary. I mean, the tariffs are always bad in their mind, and I kind of reject that. I mean, you should always be open to the possibility. It's not an ideological game at this level. Nothing is. You want to get most of your ideology, but like being an absolutist is not. Well, it is an ideological game, but it's not an absolutist ideological game where we're always opposed to tariffs no matter what the situation is. So in the history of human civilization, there's never been a moment where a tariff was appropriate. And these are reciprocal tariffs. Why do we tolerate that? And we do. And it's just, you've got to do that to do business in this country. Well, you know what? They need to do the same for us. We can't continue this asymmetrical system because it benefits a few. And sorry if there's going to be a little heartburn there. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
One day a wealthy customer bought the Indian maid. Keep the girl so far away.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. Text line, you need to be in touch with me, your show host, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Silicon, our Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall will be with us here in about a half hour or so. So stay right where you are. Let's see what else we got here. We got some text to get to. Ricky, stop sending me screenshots. It just slow to load. Dave Texter, Baldwin County is always raising taxes and we're booming. Yeah, I mean, fair enough. There's so much for supply side economics, or you would think, but I will say this about Baldwin County. Baldwin County is experiencing the growing pains that it takes money to upgrade these sewer and water systems. Some of the roads, I mean, every little county road now has a subdivision. Out in the country, right? All these farms. I grew up in Shelby County, as I talked about all the time. But like my view of Baldwin County, a lot of people, it's just the beaches, right? But it was that kind of flat farmland, pecan trees, you know, horse farms or whatever. And a lot of that's going away. It's a place people want to live. I could do it without so many garden homes, but, you know, it is what it is. I'm a transplant too, so I can't, you know, really cast stones. But the problem is you have this influx of people all at once. How do you deal with that? And they have chosen the taxation method, which is, you know, probably necessary. So, and at some point, you're going to have to build up some more of the infrastructure. The problem is when we talk about it from a state standpoint, it's a strange thing. So those of you familiar with the Jeff Poore phenomenon, I got my start in Huntsville on the radio there, and it was kind of they had just gotten the Toyota Mazda thing. There was all this Shelby money coming in to the arsenal up there. But the way the state treated it, that was the crown jewel of growth. But the growth of Baldwin County just, it eclipses that. People moving here, mostly retirees, I guess, are a big part of that. But like, I look at it from my standpoint, in the COVID economy, now that we have proven as a society we can work from anywhere, you can live in Alabama, anywhere in Alabama you want. From top to bottom. From Waterloo to Bridgeport to Grand Bay to Gordon. I mean, Baldwin County is probably your best shot. I mean, that's what I think. That's why I'm here. But I got back in the Alabama game. And I think there's a reflection of that. You just see that, you know, people still want to have the culture, and I know, well, you could just live on the Florida panhandle and kind of it's not really the same. That's what makes Baldwin County attractive. There's some other places. Obviously, North Alabama, Limestone, and Madison County. I think Lee County with Auburn, Opelika, Tuscaloosa, and Tuscaloosa County. Shelby County is always a hotbed of growth. And there's a lot of good schools. And there's like positives in all these places. But the one like thing you got here is just the amount of waterfront property and just the proximity to a lot. You get to keep the cultural aspects of the state. And you had the proximity to water. It's rare. It's finite. Michael writes, can you please ask Chairman Wall if he's seen the filth the Mobile Public Library's had in the kids section, if there's anything the State Library Board can do about it? Here's a radio topic for you to consider. My 4-year-old has discovered the public library, and I just came up when this controversy first started. Like, who still goes to the public library? So he's on a kick right now wanting monster books. He wants to learn more about monsters. Monsters are scary, but he's very, very inquisitive, very curious about monsters. So we go check out a bunch of monster books, but it's all like social engineering. There's like all of these books that are in these collections has some kind of societal message about, it's like, you know, the end of the G.I. Joe episode, learning is half the battle or whatever, or knowing is half the battle, however that goes. Like, we can't just have a children's book for the sake of it being a goofy children's book with a goofy story that makes no sense. Everything is like social engineering. It's really eye-opening. It's you know, to me, I kind of blow it off, but I guess now that we're kind of in the nitty-gritty of it, it's like bilingual bears and, you know, diverse families. And it's not like filth necessarily. The sexual stuff is there, but it's the stuff that would pass the smell test to get on the shelves. It's all of this, like, we want to raise your child's awareness to diversity and all these, you know, virtues of the American left. Multiculturalism. You know, that's what's on your library shelves. I don't know what you put in place of that other than, like I said, can we just have a goofy storybook like Cat in the Hat or whatever? It just doesn't make any sense, but kids like it. This is all part of the culture. I think it's important. Sean writes, I go to Pensacola a lot, and it's a totally different vibe than Gulf Shores. Well, usually compare Pensacola to Mobile. Same climate, same. I mean, Mobile's bigger. But you do kind of sense a different, and maybe it's this. Think about comparing Mobile and Pensacola. Pensacola has a transient population with all the military there, so you get maybe all 50 states a little bit. Very conservative. Maybe even more in ways, more conservative than Mobile, the Florida Gulf Coast, because of that military presence. Others say Pensacola is just Mobile with more tattoos. And jorts. It's a big Bama town, Sean. You look at when they did that thing a few years ago, the New York Times went in and they had somebody figure out the likes from each county in the country for their favorite college. And Escambia County, Florida was still Alabama, not University. University of Florida was a close second, but Alabama, there were more Alabama fans based on Facebook likes than there were Florida Gator fans. And maybe it's because Florida and Florida State are kind of dividing that up. But the rest of the Gulf Coast, yeah, it goes Gator the rest of the way. But anyway, the point being is there's some cultural similarities. I think some of you listening to this show have had this argument with people in the past. Feel disconnected from Montgomery and see yourself as more of a Gulf Coastian than an Alabamian. A name texter, less shootings in seems like in Pensacola. And maybe that's true, but I'm going to say this, and this is the dirty little secret about media markets. You have a weird situation, the Mobile Pensacola media market. So everything from the Bay County, no, it's the Walton County, Okaloosa County line, which divides Destin and Sandestin, all the way to, Leakesville, Mississippi, is the Mobile Pensacola media market. And of the four TV broadcast, major broadcast, Fox, ABC, NBC, CBS, the ABC affiliate is primarily focused on Florida, on Pensacola. And the rest of the other stations are more Mobile-centric. It was kind of crazy living in Destin and being able to watch, like, Todd Stacy's show and to get, you know, Bob Gripp on Fox 10 and WKRG. Those were our affiliates. And you only had one station that did, like, primarily Florida. It's funny how they divided that up. And you want to watch the Pensacola News, you watch WEAR. But the point being is you have three that try to do a little bit of both, and you have one that's just primarily focused on Pensacola and Fort Walton Beach, on Santa Rosa County, Okaloosa County, and Escambia County, and they don't get the coverage, the media coverage, Sean, or not Sean, but unnamed texter. That the mobile gets. I mean, you imagine being living in Pensacola, and that's that you have to play second fiddle to Mobile in this media market. And the reason they did this, and I would say this about the Mobile media market, that I think it's just engineered in that way to be a top 100 media market, be able to get higher at national ad rates. Because they know if they split it up, which they probably should do just for public safety concerns, but they would not earn the advertising revenue. Because if you put Pensacola and Panama City in a media market, let the Mobile kind of on its own, and then, you know, maybe you keep Greene County and Loosedale, that mix Hurley into Mobile market. Maybe. It's just still weird to me why they're not with Biloxi and Gulfport. Then the Mobile media market shrinks significantly, right? And national advertisers look at just numbers. They don't look at the nuance or any of that. And it's like McDonald's is not going to pay as much to be on or whatever national advertisers, I can pay to be on as much to be on, you know, WKRG. But it really, like, I've gone on too long about this, but we lived in Destin. There was like a water spout on the Walton County side, and it was going to cross over to the Okaloosa County side. That would have triggered all the alarm bells in the Mobile media market, but it didn't. You know, and you're like, well, I wonder what's going on there. And they only have one TV affiliate doing Florida stuff. Like, what if it makes landfall? It's a tornado. Well, then what? But if you're on the fringes of that media market, and there's a lot of population there, Niceville, Valparaiso, Destin, Crestview. How did we talk about Crestview? And there's people there. But anyway, that being said, they just don't have the resources at some of these TV affiliates to send a reporter over to cover some of these places on the Florida Panhandle that are in their media market. It's a strange, strange phenomenon. Sean always felt weird watching Jason Smith and Destin. And then Toothless Bammer lived in Ocean Springs a few years, western part of Jackson County. TV markets were New Orleans, three stations at a time, Mobile, Pensacola, Harrison County, only New Orleans and WLX. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Mr. The whole world called me Hank. You said, Pepper, can you make folks cry when you play and sing?
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Coming up tomorrow, I got Joey Clark. No trip to Montgomery. They're out this week. The school kids are on. Well, they'll be on spring break in 2 weeks. They get a work week, work from home week. So we'll be back to our normal Wednesday for at least 1 week, and then we'll be back in Montgomery a week from tomorrow, and then we'll be back at home 2 weeks from tomorrow. So, yeah, there you have it. That's coming up tomorrow. A couple other guests to be named later. Tentatively had Barry Moore, but we had pushed him back a day. And then also on Friday, we get 2 hours of the Jeff Poor Show because, 2.5 hours, you got Auburn basketball. They got the noon tip-off there, against whoever comes out of that bracket, the double bye for the Auburn Tigers. And yeah, I know Alabama with a pretty good game last Saturday. We talked about that, but hopefully the rest is what gets Auburn back on track as they head into the NCAA tournament. Anyway, enough of that. 251-343-0106 is the text line, time permitting. We'll get to your text. What do we think of? I was watching on Hannity last night, Robert Kennedy Jr. And the seed oil jihad or crusade or whatever you want to call it. But has anybody been to Steak and Shake and had the beef tallow French fries? When did it go from that to, I guess, vegetable oil or whatever? How do they taste? Is what I'm mostly concerned about. It's hard to get to Steak and Shake. I guess there's the one over on Government there by Topgolf. But that's the move, right? My wife's, she's done her darndest to cut out seed oils at our house. It's a strange phenomenon how conservative women are kind of buying into this. Because I remember the days of Sarah Palin mocking Michael Bloomberg for not letting people have a big gulp because sugary soda was contributing to obesity. And we've always had sugary sodas, right? Well, maybe not with corn syrup. It just it got to be cost prohibitive, I guess, to use real sugar. I don't know. It's the economics of our food supply contribute to that. And look, it's all about this. And this is the main point. Why do we do what we do? Well, it all started out as food security, and having a stable country is really contingent on the food supply. So they look for ways to stretch it, to make it more substantial. And I think a lot of what we do is predicated on that. Because if you have hungry people, you have an unstable population. And it may not even be revolutionary or whatever. It could just be it could just be politically unstable, right? And you had these big wave elections back and forth. But that's always been the powers to be. Look at the Fruited Plain, and they say we got to make sure the people are fed, and that keeps the country from destabilizing, and inciting any kind of big political movements or like remember a move toward communism or socialism or whatever. But it also obviously national defense. You have a hungry people, you have a weakened people. And they can, you can exploit your country. But going back to some of these traditional ingredients in our food, it's like you give just a little bit, you give an inch, and these guys take a mile. That's what it looks like with our, the companies that, General Mills, and all the cereal companies and the dyes and the sweeteners, the amount of salt they put in food. But people like to eat. It's one thing we got. We work hard here. We like to eat. We like our food. 251-343-0106. Keep them coming, guys. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.